Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you so much, Dave Solomon, on this absolutely gorgeous day in Baltimore, Maryland. And I know how some of the folks in the States are faring as far as weather is concerned. They're having a heat wave in Los Angeles and beyond, and some people are having snow. So I'm going to put it to my guest right now, who's calling me from England, and I've just spoken to this amazing saxophonist just mere moments ago, so I knew, how did I know that I would love his voice, and I indeed do. I'm going to do one of those clever, cliched things and ask the amazing Carl Stanley, how's the weather?
Well, it's actually raining here. I'm looking out the studio window. It's raining, so it's not great.
Wow. Carl, it is a pleasure to have you. I can't tell you how much I am enjoying A Beautiful Thing.
Oh, thank you. I'm good.
Listen, let me tell you something. I was not in a good mood earlier this morning at all.
Okay, right.
There is a lot going on, a lot of challenges, more than usual. I decided that I was going to put on the entire CD, and I am Little Sally Sunshine right now.
Oh, great. Maybe you can send some of it over here.
Yes.
I'll have to put the CD on.
Exactly. Change the weather inside you as opposed to what's actually outside.
Yeah, I think that's more realistic.
How did you, I've done some research on you, but one of the appeals of you, you're a very, very handsome man, and I'm sure you know
really?
That. Yes, you are.
Yeah. I'll take that compliment.
Please do. Besides that, you have somewhat of a mysterious appeal, because when one seeks to find information about you, one is hard-pressed to find information about you. So how did you get started? When did you start playing saxophone, and how on earth did you amass the respect that you have amassed? Because you've worked with some pretty heavy-duty folks.
Yeah, well, I mean, I started sort of around 16 basically teaching myself, playing along to Grover Washington, David Sanborn, things like that. And basically, it fell into place, I suppose. The first guy who professionally took me on the road was Roy Ayres. And I basically talked my way into that gig, so, it's a lot of, I think you have to be a good talker in this business. I'm not really one for blowing my own trumpet, so to speak, but sometimes you in order to get a foot in the door, you sort of have to, that's how I started, really.
Roy Ayres, having met Roy and spent a little bit of time with him, and one of his best friends is my good friend, Gar Roberts, who you might know from the Baltimore area. Gar takes a lot of photography, and he and Roy have hit the road. I'm not sure if Gar was ever on the road when you were with Roy, but Roy...
I was doing the UK and Europe dates, so I don't think I came across that particular gentleman.
Oh, look, he might have crossed the water for Roy, because they're thick as thieves. Roy likes to take people under his wing, doesn't he?
He does, yeah, definitely. I mean, I know there's a few guys who have actually come out, from his under his wing, so to speak. There's a few guys, even as Rhett Rideout, he was a great producer.
Yeah.
Another bass player called, what's his name now? Plays with George Duke. I've got his album. Oh, man, what's his name?
You're not talking about
Brian Miller?
Oh, yeah, sure.
But Brian Miller had a spell with Roy. There's a few, but I can't actually remember the rest. But he did actually, because obviously spending a lot of time with him, he used to tell me quite a few things, you know, traveling on the bus and stuff. He used to hear all sorts of stories, you know, so.
And
I remember those Rex Ryder is one of the names that came up.
You must.
Miller.
I can only imagine what it was like on the road, because Roy travels with my friend, actually Ray Gaskins, who is So Ray, of course, lived in the in England for a while, and
yeah, he was married here, I believe.
Yes, and Ray has had some stories through the years about Roy and how things go on the road. What kinds of things did you learn when you were traveling with Roy?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I was so young. I think I was probably 22 or 24.
Wow.
And, you know, having actually got onto the gig, I was still kind of, I was in shock most of the time because I couldn't actually believe it, you know what I mean? I mean, in terms of learning, I mean, it was kind of sort of etiquette in terms of being on the road and, you know, sort of mixing with the other band members, you know, that sort of thing. Because obviously, you know, you spend a lot of time with these people. It's important
to
get on. You know, and obviously, you know, if you don't get on, then, you know, you got to sort of think about the lineup again, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I took that forward in terms of the rest of the other tours that I've done throughout the years, you know. I mean, a lot of people I speak to in terms of the entertainment industry, they emphasize that a lot of the time it's not about the talent, it's about your personality also, you know, more so than your actual talent. Because if you can't get on with people, then you're not going to get on in business. So that's definitely one thing I learned.
For sure.
Obviously, musically, you know, the influence comes out in my music, I believe, because there's quite a lot of, there's a few vibraphone things going, you know, a couple of vibraphone solos, which were kind of inspired by him. I would have liked to have got him on the actual recording, but, you know, it isn't always possible to get people, to get everybody you want on, so, you know.
Of course. But you got some really choice people on this CD, so good for you. Holy cow.
Yeah. Maybe I'll try and get him on the next one.
Oh, yeah. Look, I don't think that he's going to have much of a choice next time around, because you are creating this very, very cool buzz. It took me a while, because there's so many people that either come to me or are recommended to me, and I found you on my own. So when I did, I was just so blown away, because I was actually bummed that I hadn't known about you before the time I did.
I mean, it's a bit of a strange situation being from the UK. You know, there's always that sort of, I mean, I'm not so sure now, but back in the day, you know, there's kind of a stigma with UK musicians trying to sort of get into the American style genres, if you like. But I think it's nice that people can actually just do a bit of research now and find music themselves, rather than it being sort of, you know, them being forced to listen to things that, you know, they probably wouldn't listen to, which in turn then eliminates a lot of other things that they might possibly come across. Do you know what I mean?
I do, and you just said something that is going to trigger a question for me. Now that you have your perspective, and of course I'm very much drawn to the way you play, because I am fascinated by the folks who are not necessarily in the States, folks who have a different sort of interpretation of instrumental music that you can call jazz elsewhere, apart from the United States of America. So when you think of yourself and the way that you play, do you chafe at the notion that there are people that would be eager to put you into a kind of box, a subgenre of jazz?
You know, the thing about my approach is basically, you know, I know it sounds cliche, but I try and be as honest as possible in terms of my actual own physical abilities on the instrument.
Of course.
And, you know, what I believe is a true representation of what, you know, I am about musically, you know what I mean? It's difficult to get away from the influences, obviously. I mean, I gravitate towards people like Kurt Whalen, obviously David Sanborn, George, Ever Harp. But then I listen to Michael Brecker as well, which obviously won't come out in my playing because of the actual backdrop in terms of what I'm, playing on top of musically. But yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I don't aspire to be put in any particular category, so to speak, I mean, good, as long as people like what I'm doing, they can put it in whatever category they see fit, really.
That's cool. I said just a few seconds ago, of course, and I don't even mean to say that. That just came out of rolling out of my mouth. The fact of the matter is that you do so much appear to be honest in what you do, and what you've done on this particular project is different than what other people are doing. I'm so grateful for that because it sounds like you are enjoying every note. First of all,
Well, I try. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, it's I think in terms of what you actually do, there are so many people, like you said, doing, working to that formula to try and get radio play. And that's great, obviously, everybody wants that. Radio is great for this music, for any music, in terms of reaching people. But I think, there's a risk of sort of watering yourself down to try and accommodate that, you know what I mean?
Oh, do I ever?
I've basically gone in and basically, I'm saying to myself, well, if it feels good to me, then I'm sure it'll feel good to somebody else. You know what I mean? And that's the approach in terms of what I'm trying to do musically. It's kind of like it takes on its natural form when I'm writing. And then, like I said, hopefully somebody will like it as much as I do, And people are catching on to it, so.
I hope that there are a lot more people that do because you have been so creative on this. I'm telling you, no one else that I've ever known actually has an interlude, and a postlude, little musical introductions, as it were, to the larger pieces. And then you have instrumental and vocal arrangements of one song a couple of times, and I thought, doggone, is that clever.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, it kind of took, this album, it's taken me a while to get it together because I've had a few issues with, things being stolen and whatever. So I basically had to start again from scratch, really. And obviously, being an independent artist, the budgets, you haven't got huge budgets. So when I sort of got the album towards being, near the finishing stage, I thought, okay, well, there's something, although I'm on a limited budget here, there's something interesting I can do in terms of the vocal pieces. As I'm an instrumental artist primarily, so why not sort of, switch them around, And then obviously my solo parts, I, featured Ollie Silk on Hold Me Close, the instrumental. And basically I filled in my own instrumental parts on the version of Love, the instrumental version of that. So, it kind of, and I think it's an interesting comparison, actually, because people gravitate more, I'm not sure. I would have thought that the vocal versions would have been more popular, but people have been saying, oh, I love the instrumental version of Hold Me Close, more so than the vocal, And sometimes that doesn't happen. The instrumental version gets overlooked, if you like. Especially if there's a vocal version to choose from.
Oh, and I know Gianna. Gianna and I have spent some time together. She's wonderful. But even she would tell you the same thing that I'm going to tell you because we have actually discussed this. And certainly you can appreciate this because you don't live in the United States, so therefore I think that your consciousness has been raised about this particular point even more than those of us who live here, which is that when you have a what is going to be when someone hears some of the instrumentals on this album, when when people feel a bond with an instrumental song, it becomes so personal that really words get in the way.
And that is another thing. I know what you're saying. I mean, I think I've heard Kurt Whalen say something like that. Not about my music particularly, but about instrumental music as a whole.
Oh, yeah.
It bypasses certain things and goes straight in, you know, where it's supposed to go. So.
And actually...
Sometimes the lyric, it does get in the way, you know what I mean?
It does for more than one reason, because... I'm just going to think about the influx of different kinds of people that come into the UK. People from Ethiopia, people from South America, people who have multiple languages. And when you hear someone sing a song in the English language, it's very, very frustrating because you're feeling the music, but you don't understand the phrasing.
What they're saying. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely that. I didn't think of it like that, but yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely that's an interesting way of looking at it. I mean, I've often thought that myself about, you know, hearing music in other languages, but I've never sort of thought about my own music, you know what I mean? Because obviously I speak English. You kind of, you know, speaking English language, you kind of spoiled really, because people sort of gravitate towards learning it for some reason.
Yeah, and I think that we're all taking a second look now, for those of us who know this particular language as their primary language. I think that because we're all thinking of ourselves as global beings these days, and putting pride aside just so we can understand somebody else's condition somewhere else, The whole instrumental vibe, when you feel close to a song, it becomes more important to you than it ever has, because these have been tough times to exist.
Definitely. I hear that. I mean, there's things that I used to listen to, and I still do listen to, you know, when they come on iTunes on a random play, and it's sort of, I think, oh my God, when, you know, like things like from 1993 and things like that, you know, you get that sort of, that same connection that you had with that song. And that's the great thing about music, you know.
Oh, and you just make it, Carl, seem so personal. Oh, my God. I feel frequently when I'm listening to this beautiful endeavor of yours, I feel there are intimate moments here instrumentally that are pretty rare. When somebody is able to do that, oh, that's a gift.
And I think that comes from probably selfishly on my big part that, okay, I think when you've got a song that you've sort of been babysitting, so to speak, from the start to finish, it's difficult for me personally to get people involved in the production process. I mean, even if budgets were huge and, you know, sometimes, you know, record companies insist on you having a producer because they're trying to reach a certain, you know, demographic. You know, I think I've got the luxury now of being able to sort of produce everything myself and get it to sound, you know, as it's intended to sound, emotionally and musically, if you see what I'm saying. So I think that's the sort of, you know, I think, like I said, it's because it sounds so personal, because so much of me is in it, you know, in terms of the work. Obviously, you know, I've got featured artists, but the backbone in terms of production is all myself, you know. So I think that's where the personal stamp obviously comes into it.
Well, the cool thing is, and I'm going to play a track so folks can have an introduction to you if they had not heard you before now. Woo! The track that I'm going to play just sort of brings to mind that you picked some people on this album that get you. I don't know of any musician. I really love Dwight Sills. I can't say.
Listen, I mean, you know, when I first heard Dwight, you know, I mean, I've got all his albums, all his solo albums.
So gorgeous.
His sound is just, I mean, that, for me, there's no one else. I mean, there's loads of guitar players that obviously sound similar. You know, and especially in when you're doing a certain type of music, people are going to sound similar. But there was something that I heard him play on. I can't recall what it was. And he played just like a few notes, you know, and it came across as kind of a country and western kind of, you know, that slide guitar kind of vibe he's got.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, this guy is ridiculous, you know. The soulfulness and, you know, he's got the whole thing. I mean, obviously, I listen to other guys as well. You know, I love Paul Jackson Jr. and, you know, Ray Fuller and Ron Lowe. You know, there's so many I could mention, but Dwight Sills just got this sparkle for me. So when I was like, listen, I got to get this guy on my album. And basically, all I did was I sent him a message on Facebook because obviously we're friends on Facebook. And it was as simple as that. He said, oh, look, you know, just send me the track and we'll work it out. And it was simple. I was like, over the moon. And when he sent me back, when he sent the parts back to me, I was like, I was dancing around my living room. I was like, I can't wait to get this out. Get this out, you know. So, but it's just great to have somebody of that caliber, and who I respect, you know, involved in my first project. It's just great, beautiful.
And see, the thing is that you two are cut from a similar cloth, in that you are both able to be so fluid yet so passionate in what you're able to do in that fluidity. So it was like...
I think that's the connection that we have, actually. I don't know Dwight personally. I only know his music. We've never even spoken, only through emails. But, you know, you just know when you hear somebody play, you know, you hear somebody play a few notes that they're on, you know, they're sort of, whether they're about the same thing in terms of where you are and what you think about representing yourself musically, if you see what I'm saying. You know, he's got that honesty about you know, what he's been listening to and the influences that he's, you know, it's just great.
He is absolutely wonderful, and we've been buddies for a while now. He's been on the show, and what you have just said about honesty, actually you can use another word for this: authenticity.
Yeah.
Woo. You just did remarkable. There was really some sweet chemistry here. And I'm going to play the song, The Way You Smile. Woo!
Okay.
if folks have not heard this from A Beautiful Thing by the really fabulous Carl Stanley, check this out on Hybrid Jazz. Just lean back and enjoy. honestly, I can't think of a better way to describe Carl Stanley's music, especially on A Beautiful Thing, other than it is the musical equivalent of spring. If you want to give it a season, it's spring.
Well, that's my favorite season. That's my favorite, what's the word? Time of year.
See, and you were putting that vibe in there because I was thinking of the expression, a young man's fancy turns to whatever, love or lust or joy or hope. There's all of that. My God, is there an abundance of romance? I was so sad that I was by myself a couple of times when I heard this.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Because, look, we're going to get to that track that there's Gianna does two tracks. And when I heard her do Hold Me Close, I went, stop it. Turn it off. Listen to it later because you don't need to hear it right now. Okay.
It's one of those songs.
It is. Man, let me tell you something. Guys, I'll just put it to you, if you're listening to this live or in the archives later, ladies, I have a different story for you. But, guys, if you can't get a little something-something going on after hearing this CD, then you better go back to basics.
Wow.
For sure.
Yeah, I'm staying out of that one.
It's just as wise if you do, Carl, because you really can't be objective.
The funny thing is, I actually wrote, when I was working with Misha Paris, I actually presented her with that song, but because I thought it was perfect for her voice. I mean, having performed with her on stage, you know, and being blown away. You know, when I actually wrote the song, it wasn't specifically for her, but I did present it to her. But the album that she was doing at the time was going into a bit more of a, more. Well, it's a different direction, basically. So I'm glad she didn't use it because then I was able to use it myself.
And you know, speaking of,
came out pretty well with Gianna on it.
Say that again.
It came out pretty good with Gianna on it. Great.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh, no doubt. Because there is a particular kind of soulfulness in her, and what makes it is that she was able to capture some sort of deep vulnerability so that you feel as if there's some sort of innocence maybe being lost, or she just wanted something so bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I sent her the song because she was obviously in the UK when we recorded it. She was doing some promo for her own album, which is on Expansion label, I believe.
Yes.
I mean, I've got a copy of it, but I can't remember. Yeah, it's Expansion. So, you know, I was like, well, you know, let me know when you get in the UK. And we just sort of hooked the session up, you know, and she did it in one take. And I think she did the other song in one take as well. It's just amazing.
She has a way of capturing something. I can't describe it, but really sweet. And you are pretty amazing in that you have worked, gosh, in doing some of the research about some of the people that you have worked with. For example, Andy Abraham. He's freaking huge in the UK, isn't he?
You know those guys over in the UK? In the States? Or?
I am just beginning to be aware of who is hot and has some sort of longevity in the UK. And I get blown away.
Yeah.
I mean, man, heavyweight stuff.
Yeah, he's great, man. I mean, I love working with him. I've not seen him for a while now, but he's, you know, unfortunately in this country, you know, when you've got talents such as that, you know, it's a difficult market, you know.
Yeah.
There's some great artists that are never going to get the exposure that they deserve, you know, just because the record companies don't know how to place them in the market, you know. It's, you know, same thing with Misha Paris as well. It just amazes me how she's not, like, on the same level as some of the, you know, the most prominent singers out there now, you know. So.
Yeah, well, yeah. Carl, let me ask you this, because I've noticed this, and this is a really important point. With Andy, I've noticed, I'm not so sure about Will Young's story, But it seems as though in delving into folks who are popular that are in Europe, they are they deliberately, and this is the only phrase that comes to mind quickly, and you'll get what I mean, all over the map as far as genres that they're doing, or are they told to be all over the map?
Well, I would think you're talking about in terms of record company influence, are you?
I'm talking about, I see Andy Abraham with doing some pop classics, doing some maybe not so much pop classics, but other.
Well, let me put it like this. I mean, when I was, because obviously when I work for people, I always have, you know, I always have some sort of idea of what songs I'd love to hear them sing. And we were doing some writing at the studio here at my house one day. And, I had a few things that I was working on. Just, I was messing about, you know. And I think one of the tracks that I put together was Lady Love Me One More Time by George Benson, right?
Yes.
So I put this arrangement together. And I said, oh, Andy, listen to this. You know, we're just having a coffee, you know, we're just having a break from writing. I said, oh, just check this out. And as soon as he started singing, I was like, man, you know, this guy should be singing these sorts of songs. I mean, obviously, okay, George Benson plays guitar, Andy doesn't play guitar, but in terms of the vocal delivery, and it was just like a you know, it wasn't like a recording situation, it was just like a sitting down, having a coffee and singing over this track that I, you know, put together, arrangement of this, and it was just awesome, you know? And I think there was another one, Luther Vandross, Never Too Much?
Yeah.
I was working on arrangement, you know, just for some personal stuff. And again, I play that to him, and he just, obviously because he knows these songs, you know, growing up with that sort of music. And it was just like a natural fit. But like you said, you know, in terms of being all over the map, it would be nice to see him do something like that. But then it comes down to what the record company, how would they market it, you know? I mean, maybe if it was signed in the US, then it would be a different story. But here, it's a totally different matter.
Yeah, that's what I picked up because in hearing him, he is pretty bloody soulful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
When he does these pop songs, look, the fact of the matter is, boy, I shouldn't even say this.
Well, they're playing for records, aren't they? So.
Exactly, and there are a whole lot of folks who can do pop and do it very pleasantly and strongly. But for someone to have the soul or the deeper appreciation to do R&B...
Kind of wasted on that genre, right?
Exactly!
Yeah, definitely, I hear that. And I'm obviously, I don't know if you can tell, but I'm quite passionate about the subject of music. So oftentimes when I've got musician friends, you know, we're hanging out or whatever, you know, it turns to that subject and who are our favourite players and what's happening in the industry and blah, 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 you know. So these things often come up.
Well, it's good that they do. And, Carl, to tell you the truth, if you were not passionate like this, it would not be reflected in your music.
Definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, my whole approach was never to get into, I mean, you know, I kind of fell into music. I mean, some people say, okay, music kind of chooses you or whatever. You know, I had no idea or any sort of indication that this is what I was going to be doing for a living, you know, when I was coming up through school. So, you know, it's when it's a kind of a natural part of your life, I think it sort of, it soaks, everything comes through it. You know what I mean?
I do, and here's something else that you do that not a lot of artists can do easily. I have seen some pictures of you where you are in a club situation, and there are people that are about an inch away from you while you're playing.
Oh, yeah.
And you are just as comfortable as if you were standing on a stage with a nice safe distance of people being 10 or 15 feet away. You just really gravitate. You lose yourself in those moments. So that's how I mean, tell.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to translate that kind of energy into a recording situation, no problem.
I mean, it's funny because at one point, a few years, well, quite a long, a while back now, I was busking. I don't know, you know the word busking, like when
I do.
Right, okay. It was like a hot day, so I was like, okay, I'm going to go out and, you know. And I was playing in this city, I think it was called Leicester, and this lady walked across. She could obviously hear me for a while. And she stood there for maybe 5 minutes listening to, I think I was playing something like a Nat King Cole, When I Fall in Love, something like this. And when I finished, she said it was almost embarrassing to watch me play because it was so, I revealed so much of my personal or personality or some, you know what I mean? I revealed so much of myself in my play. So, I mean, that was kind of an interesting thing to hear. You never kind of, when you're doing your thing, you're never kind of analysing yourself to that degree, you know, if at all. Because I just, like you said, I just get into it and try and, you know, play from my heart in whatever situation. I mean, whether it's in a club or a corporate gig or, you know, Peter White or Jeff Lorber or, you know, Misha, you know, whoever.
And that's so interesting because what you basically said is what we were just discussing about the work you did in the studio, which is that there is this intimate quality, and you even are able to convey that when you play because she felt like she was intruding.
Well, there you go, out on the street in front of, you know, a couple of hundred people. But I think, you know, the beauty of technology these days, it allows you that intimacy. You know, I mean, I live in a three-story house, so, like, my studio is on the ground floor. You know, it's a nice, cozy little hole, so to speak. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's not huge. But in terms of going this environment versus going to a studio where you're on the clock, you know, and time is money and all that.
Oh, yes.
I think the music just breathes more, you know. Because obviously you're more relaxed, so it's kind of a natural, you know, it's a natural occurrence. So that's the great thing about having all this technology these days. It just allows you to be yourself even more.
And that's interesting that you've just said what you said, because with the connections that you have been able to make through the years, I imagine that studio is pretty formidable. So it makes all the difference in the world when you're able to spend time there as opposed to being stressed out, looking at the stopwatch all the time, thinking, got to get this lick done. We don't have three more minutes.
More and more artists, even some of the mainstream guys, you know, they're recording in their home studios now. You know, I mean, people have been doing it for years, but I mean, like I said, with technology now, it's more, you know, it's becoming more and more of a common thing. And I think, you know, I'm not saying there's better songs these days or, you know, back in the day there were better songs, but there's definitely a level of creativity, you know, that it allows you when you're in that sort of environment, you know what I mean?
On the other side of that, there are some really bad studios.
There you go.
When some artists turn out some work, you really wish they hadn't, because there are some folks who believe that just because they have a studio, their work is going
it's
to be worthy, and that's not the case. So to have the discipline, first of all, that you know that the work is going to be good and that you have a studio that is going to command some sort of very cool sound that is competitive in this extremely competitive market, that's a big thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, that side of what I do is kind of, it's probably my downfall, you know, in terms of the competitive, because I'm naturally not a competitor when it comes, you know what I mean? It's kind of not, it's not my sort of drive to play and create music. You know, the musicians are out there, like, oh, yeah, I've got to play better than this guy, I've got to play better than that guy.
Oh,
I mean, I'm not the greatest technician in terms of being a saxophone player, but what I hope is that people can actually feel, you know what I mean? And that's the most important thing.
Carl, let me tell you something. How many times have we discussed this on the show? And you're a sweetie for saying that you don't feel as if you're possibly maybe the most proficient. But when you are able to do with your music what you are able to do, and folks are going to know in a second or so, because I'm going to play this vocal track, what you are able to do is much more important than any scenario whereby jazz snobs are sitting around saying, "Oh, how about the lick he did in the second minute of that solo? Isn't that breathtaking?" You know what? That's wonderful, but who cares? It's the power of the music that counts.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, and this is another debate we have. You know, it's kind of the intellectual versus the heart. You know.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
And the heart for me, the heart will always win for me when it, you know, in terms of the music. It's, you know, it's not a mathematical thing for me. It's a feeling thing. So, yeah, I mean, but yeah, it's an interesting topic of conversation. But I think, like I said, anything that I do is going to reflect honesty and who I, you know, about who I am musically. It's not, there's no airs or graces. It's coming directly from my heart.
And especially with the saxophone, because I've noticed through the time I've spent doing this that when I hear certain folks play, I hear them stretching for the technical aspects. I hear them stretching to match Coltrane or to match Charlie Parker or Michael Brecker, as you mentioned. But that's all that they're possessing in that moment is trying to achieve rather than trying to feel.
Yeah. I think it's kind of okay, it's great to be respected by other musicians, and I think that's what a lot of those guys who, you know, sort of dwell on the technique side of playing are sort of kind of looking for. You know, they're looking for that sort of acceptance from people who do play to that level. You know, people like Michael Brecker. I mean, Michael Brecker is one of my favorite saxophone players.
Oh, yeah.
Not just, but the thing is, he doesn't just play, he's not around now, but he didn't just play technique. He had so much soul as well, that guy. You know, when he played on a pop song, you would never know that he was one of the best jazz saxophonists on the planet, or the best as far as I was concerned. You know what I mean? It's that ability to turn that off and, you know, play to the listener, so to speak.
Listen, Carl, he and I grew up miles apart from each other. We were close in age. Yes, and he was the suburban Philadelphia guy who was going to Cheltenham High School, and he and Randy, used to play some local gigs, and Michael gravitated, just as many of us did, to not only the jazz that was just pounding in Philadelphia.
But
rock and also blues and soul, because that was all in the mix. So you know, because it's so wild to see this happen, that you know, you gravitate to Michael Brecker and he gravitated to somebody else, and somebody's going to gravitate to you and try to be like Carl Stanley.
Well, it's actually funny you should say that, actually, because a few years ago I knew a guy, a piano player actually, who was friends with another saxophone player, a lot older than me. You know, and somebody actually called, and this was like maybe 10 years ago, somebody called him and said they'd heard me play and they wanted to sound like me. And I was like, are you actually kidding me? I was like, you know, this is 10 or 15 years ago now. And at that point, I didn't consider myself anywhere near, you know, I don't even want to say a good player or anything, you know what I mean? But for somebody to say that, it's kind of a strange thing, you know, at that stage of my playing. But I suppose they wanted to learn, so they had to use me. They would use me as a reference, kind of thing. You know what I mean? But I was.
That's
wild. I thought it was hilarious.
But see, your humility is what is going to keep on propelling you to greatness. When you have that sense of self-effacing humor or humility about so much more to learn, you're going to be hungry for all this inspiration that comes into your music, and it's just going to keep flourishing and flourishing, and you're going to bless people every day. It's very cool.
Hopefully. That's the goal,
Well, let's play. I'm going to let you go after this song, but don't go yet because I want people.
Power.
Yeah, that's cool. This is from A Beautiful Thing. This is Carl Stanley, who is my guest today. I'm so thrilled that he had the time. This is Hold Me Close with our friend Gianna on vocals here. Get ready on Hybrid Jazz. Well, Carl Stanley, I've taken the liberty of handing out cold compresses to everyone in the chat room. Thank you very much. Woo! Oh, my gosh. Well, needless to say, I don't know if I'm going to ask you about the inspiration for these songs. I mean, these are original songs on here, and there seems to be a little pattern. Mercy.
We'll leave that for another show, shall we?
I don't even know what to say because we've got Beach from Southern California with me in the chat room. We've got Griselda from Texas and a few anonymous guests. And we are all so taken with the content of this song. Did you have in mind that with this A Beautiful Thing CD, did you have in mind that any particular purpose?
Well, first and foremost, like I said, you know, honesty. And I think music, you know, has the power to connect something that you've been through with, you know, something that somebody else has been through, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So, it's, you know, I mean, some people are afraid to sort of put that side of themselves to the forefront, you know. But I feel, like I said, you know, if you're going to be honest, you do the whole thing, you know. And I think music is a great platform. I mean, I've had so many messages about that particular song. I can't, you know, I'm not going to say exactly what the message were in the messages, but, you know, it's all good positive stuff. And it's, you know, and that's, you know, if one person, it connects with one person, that's enough for me, you know.
Well, I'm going to say that.
Foremost, it's about being honest about what I feel, you know, and what I should be, you know. It's just life at the end of the day, you know. It's just life.
Well, here's what you've done, and I'll just say this publicly. I know that you have had an association with Peter White since 2011.
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Peter White has learned a lot from you. Let me tell you something, because Peter has infused a lot more soulfulness that he picked up by osmosis from you.
well, I mean, this guy. I'd like to believe that. I'd love to believe that. The ego side of me, I'm sure my ego would love to believe that, but.
Oh,
this guy plays in some of my all-time favorites, you know, so I'm sure he would have rubbed off on him far more than I have.
Trust me, he has studied you.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, because, look, when I found out that you teamed up with him in 2011 and having seen him before and having seen him after, oh, yeah, it's you.
Oh, okay, right, well. I'll have to mention that to him when I see him in October. Actually, in August, I'm going to be seeing him again, actually. So, yeah, I'll have to mention it to him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he'll either chuckle or not, but he really does observe those around him very carefully.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's great, man. I mean, you know, like I said, being over here and kind of locked away from the whole scene, so to speak, it's great to... I mean, you know, because obviously I know Peter's music. I've been listening to him, you know, since, I've got most of his albums, you know, as I have with a lot of these other artists. So it's kind of a dream job for me, you know, to be on the same stage with somebody like that, because I love his music, you know. And because, you know, the approach is about the melody rather than technique, again, you know.
Yes.
It's just it's a pleasure, man, you know. I can't think of another word for it. It's just a pleasure, really. And he's quite happy with what I'm doing, so it's even more rewarding.
That, he probably sees something in you when he was younger. Look, I would not even say a word about Peter White. This is the man who co-wrote with Al Stewart Time Passages. That's all I need,
right, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, we're actually doing a show with Al Stewart at the Royal Albert Hall in October, actually.
God.
We're performing the whole Year of the Cat album, so that should be
Get amazing. Out of Dodge, really?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's October the 15th. Don't quote me on that. But I know it's around, you know, give or take a couple of days, around that time.
Well,
it's going to be an interesting gig.
October 16th is my birthday. I'll have to figure out a way to go.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Carl, that is so wild. It just seems like some really wonderful things have opened up for you to do. But I really want to see you be more and more in a leadership capacity, a band leader capacity, because your future really does look bright. You got to pick up a lot of sunglasses in the next few months or so.
Nah. Yeah, well, I probably won't be wearing them here, but yeah.
That's true. Wow.
But yeah, thank you for that. I mean, you know, it's nice to hear sort of encouraging words from somebody who knows the genre as well. You know, it's great. It's just, and you know, I think if you're honest with what you do, I think, you know, you'll get to where you want to be in the end, I think. And I truly believe that.
Yes, you're correct.
I'm just going to continue doing what I think is the right thing in terms of what musically, representing myself musically. I'm just going to continue and try and do the best representation of myself as I can. You know,
you be the best Carl Stanley that you can be, because you are very unique, and you give a different kind of perspective to whatever anybody wants to call the kind of jazz or soul-infused jazz, whatever people want to call it. You, as long as you keep saying to yourself, I'm going to follow the vision I have in my head and in my soul, and nobody is going to tell me what I'm supposed to be, that's going to be the key to everything.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Bless your heart. I know you got a role. Thank you so much, Carl.
Pleasure. That hour's gone so quickly.
It really has, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, best of everything to you. I hope to see you in the States one of these days soon.
Thank you, Trish. Definitely.
Thank you, Carl. Have a wonderful evening.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Carl Stanley, he's got an appointment. And he's going to roll, and it's really wonderful that he spent this much time, because it was going to be maybe 45 minutes or so initially. But you know I'm going to roll with a last track, and this is one of those tracks that we alluded to during the hour, because Carl wrote a song called Love, and Gianna is featured on the vocal side. But remember that he said that folks were gravitating to the instrumentation for the song, and you're going to hear why. From A Beautiful Thing, this is a song just simply called Love, from Carl Stanley on Hybrid Jazz.
In my solitude, you haunt me. With reveries of days gone by.
Darcy, was that girl meant to sing jazz or what? Oh, I hope that Diane Reeves understands the impact of her voice when she does certain songs. Ooh, I just love that so much. Solitude from Good Night and Good Luck, the soundtrack from back in 2005, the movie that George Clooney directed and starred in. The story from the 1950s about Edward R. Murrow, who was one of the world's most amazing journalists and had a show that I remember as a little girl, my dad and I used to watch. He used to do interviews. He sat there, one of the great voices of all time, sat there smoking, because that's what you could do back then, and he would interview people like Marilyn Monroe and Nikita Khrushchev and these powerful figures that were either in the entertainment business or in the political world, just made such a difference. And he was one of those people that was targeted by this Looney Tune, Joe McCarthy, back in the 50s. And this was the story. And George Clooney got a lot of information from his dad, who had worked in the business and who knew some of the inside scoops that many were not privy to have. So George did his homework not only for the scripting process, but here is how passionate he felt about the story. First of all, he handpicked the music. That was a big enough thing all by itself, because he was adamant about the music sounding a certain way, which is why he gravitated to Diane Reeves and these carefully chosen musicians. Then George had been injured on his work with Syriana, so he tried to get insurance, as is the usual case for films. He couldn't get the proper insurance, so he mortgaged his home in order to make this movie possible. I just love the man. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards. Diane Reeves and company won a Grammy for jazz performance, so it was worth it. If you have seen the movie, you know the work involved. A beautiful movie. Good night and good luck. There you have it. Solitude. Woo! Then, as if it was glided one song into another, it just, this show, I don't know what it was today, but I just am feeling the songs today. Miles Davis and his Blue in Green from Kind of Blue. And I wanted to tell you something about the timing on this particular piece today. Let me see if I can find it. MilesDavis.com has some information that just took me by surprise. I just saw this morning. There is, it says, read more on MilesDavis.com. In 2 days, New York City is going to honor a preservation center to make sure that folks know that where Miles spent so much of his time in New York, it's going to have some sort of celebration. The word came out today, but the actual location is going to be happening in the celebration on Thursday, May the 16th, from 3 to 4 p.m. The brownstone townhouse purchased by Miles in 1958 that served as both home and working environment for Miles for 25 years. There's going to be some sort of celebration there on 312 West 77th Street. So folks in New York who are listening, make sure you go to milesdavis.com and find out what other scenarios are going to be involved in this. But I just thought it was interesting timing since the only intention I had to play Miles Davis today was to make sure you knew that his birthday was May the 26th, 1926. He passed away in 1991. I'm all about May birthdays today. But in planning this, there just seemed to be a little voice that said, go to milesdavis.com. And then we find out about the celebration, about the brownstone that he lived in that's happening in 2 days. So, yay! In any case, you know about Kind of Blue because it is possibly the most monumental jazz recording that ever was. Possibly the best-selling jazz LP that ever was, featuring Bill Evans on piano, the great Bill Evans, Jimmy Cobb on drums, Paul Chambers on bass, John Coltrane, Cannonball Adderley, a part of this amazing effort in modality. And you can look that up in your Funkin' Wagnalls. There is a number of things to say about Kind of Blue, other than the fact that it was recorded in March and April of 1959, featuring Miles in perfection. Not that there wasn't flaws in the man, but with this particular recording, it just is one of those breathtaking pieces that will live forever in the hearts and minds of any kind of person who was halfway sane about jazz. Carl Stanley, oh mercy, wasn't that good. Oh, love. You want to pick up this CD, A Beautiful Thing. All of these tracks are original recordings. On that particular effort, by the way, that was the more instrumental version. Gianna Welling does the vocals on this CD as well. But just so you know, it was Carl on programming and spoken vocal and tenor sax, Dwight Sills on guitars, additional programming, Ali Silk, and then Gianna doing the intermittent vocals there. Wasn't that lovely? Another one of those legends that is celebrating a birthday. Actually, he's not around. Look, if you were born in 1904, it would be amazing if you were. A couple of folks still are, but not the case with Fats Waller. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Gianna Welling. Fats Waller, born May 21st, 1904, passed away in 1943, much too soon. Jazz pianist, composer, singer, gifted comedian, friend to so many. You know the song without me even telling you. Come on now, you know the song, Ain't Misbehavin'. Here we are on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thanks for listening today.
Thinking of a misbehaving, saving. my love for you. Like Jack Horner in the corner, don't go nowhere, what do I care? Your kisses are worth waiting for.
Believe me, I don't stay out late, no place to go. I'm home about eight, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving, saving all my love for you. Radio.
Stevie Wonder, God bless you. Happy birthday from yesterday. Stevie turned 63 yesterday. Woohoo! Lord have mercy, that is like really surreal to say. Recently, one of the disc jockeys who was in this area that I adore, because when you know that somebody is close to your own roots, and then you meet up in another town, there seems to be this kind of unspoken bond. Tim Watts is from Camden, New Jersey, and of course I grew up in Philly, just across the bridge. Tim Watts is a big disc jockey in Baltimore at Magic 95.9. So we go back and forth a lot with exchanges on Facebook, either in messages or on the wall. So he found it fascinating that this is one of my favorite Stevie songs. I said, you know what, you can't understand unless you're a female, because females, if they have a connection to that song, it's strong. For a man to write that song about a relationship with a woman, that is very special. It just goes to show you how much of a genius Stevie is to get into the frame of mind the way some women would think or what they would say. Just really remarkable. Steve Land, Hardaway Judkins, whose actual real legal last name is Morris, at the strong suggestion of his late mother, who really was something else, and Stevie loved her heart and soul. Oh my gosh. Signed to Motown's Tamla label, check this out, when he was 11. And in case you never knew the circumstances behind Stevie's blindness, I just learned the specifics of this recently. He was born prematurely in, well, do the math, 63 years ago. So what happened is that the retinas were never able to form properly. So he has never seen. And when you recognize the length and breadth of the brilliance of the music that he has been able to give us, oh my God, what a gift, through all of these years. You just recognize that even though some things are absolutely tragic and you can't understand and you won't be able to understand until you die and maybe all of this will get explained, would he have been able to turn out this kind of magic had he been sighted? You just have to wonder about those things. especially the acute sensitivity that he has been able to display. That song, That Girl, from Original Musicarium back in 1982. The song was the leading single from the album. 9 weeks at number one on the R&B charts, no surprise. Man, I love that song. Woo! Woohoo! Some of the words to that make me crazy because they just ring so true. Gail Johnson, Philly born, yes! Actually, Germantown, to be specific, and I was right up the street in Jenkintown, PA. From her story in 2011, that was Electric Lady. Gail's been on my mind a lot these days because our good friend Yolanda Bell has been rooming with Gail. Gail is so wonderful to take Yolanda in. Yolanda left Baltimore. The plan was to live in Las Vegas. She has become so enamored of Southern California that she's now going to stay. Gail, I know, is very much amused by this change of plans. She probably knew. Gail is going to be coming our way with Jazz and Pink at the Cap Jazz Festival in the early part of June, the first weekend. So we're looking forward to that. And we're wondering if Yolanda Bell is going to be bringing her camera so she can shoot some really good shots. If you have never seen Yolanda Bell photography, you might want to check that out. Some beautiful pictures. That was Electric Lady, her story. And Fats Waller, born May 21st, 1904, passed away in 43, all too soon. Great little story about Fats Waller, who just was so much to so many people. Beloved of Louis Armstrong, who, when Louis found out that Fats had passed away on a cross-country train near Kansas City, Louis' train stopped in Kansas City at the same time. Word came to Louis that Fats had passed away from complications from pneumonia. You could not console Louis Armstrong for days. That's how much he loved Fats Waller. But let us not speak of death. Let us speak of a life that was fully lived. Fats grew up in a gospel home. Dad didn't like the idea that Fats gravitated to jazz in those early days, and Fats said, I'm going to do it. I know that I got a talent. Indeed, did his first rag at the age of 15, was working professionally. Oscar Levant, if that name rings a bell to you, a very quirky pianist who was more well-known back in the 60s when I was growing up, used to refer to Fats Waller as the Black Horowitz. So proficient was he on piano and organ. This is how crazy loved he was back in those days. After a gig one night, Fats Waller was kidnapped. You can imagine he's shaking in his shoes. A bunch of white guys took him. I don't know if they put the black hood over his face, but they didn't tell him where they were going to take him. He didn't know what was going on. They took him to a party that was being given by Al Capone. He was instructed to play, and he did, for 3 days. So by the end of this 3 days, he was given so much in the way of tip money. He had thousands of dollars. For that day, that was crazy. Al Capone loved Fats Waller. Apparently, so did the other gangsters in the area. So you can imagine that there were more stories like this during the time of Fats Waller. And I know that there are some stories about him, publication form. You need to check it out. He was a character. Got to put a YouTube close to his birthday so you can see what kind of life force he was. Amazing. We got a lot of music to play. I'm still just so happy still from Carl Stanley. Wasn't he a love? Just love to hear that accent. Well, you know, on second thought, didn't make much sense to go on with it. And then I told him before the interview started that my grandmother had Liverpool, England ties. That's where she was from. So he was like, oh, my God, that's where I go every weekend. I love it. Jonathan Kreisberg, he was here not that long ago. What a sweetheart. Just as we were saying in the chat room, Carl Stanley is a good-looking man, so is Jonathan Kreisberg. My goodness. He's in New York for the next several weeks, then he's off to Europe and South America for a tour. This is one of those songs that for those of us who were listening to pop and jazz radio back in the 60s, we're a little familiar with. Canto de Asana. Asana. Gesundheit. From Jonathan's Just Guitar CD called One. Something newer on Hybrid Jazz. Ooh, you'll like this. Thank you. Mercy, wasn't that sweet? Oh, Billy Cobham and Company. Oh, yes. He of Miles Davis fame and Mahavishnu Orchestra fame and all on his own fame. If you recall any work he did with George Duke, Lord. Oh, was that good. And I think that I heard George say that he and Billy are revamping the work that they did, maybe a re-release or a release of some work that hadn't been heard. Whatever the circumstances, whatever they do together is just going to be choice. Billy Cobham is celebrating his 69th birthday on the 16th, just a couple of days away. What a long and wonderful career he's had. Oh, I would love to be a fly on the wall of some of those past performances. This particular one, that song you heard was called Destinos, from a group that he collaborated with named Esere. Now, Billy had gotten to know this group. It's a 7-member Havana-based group at the WOMAD Festival in Spain, 2002. And they got together to record at Peter Gabriel's Real World Studios in England. The song was written by trumpeter Michel Pedron, who was also the featured soloist on the track. And in 2007, Billy thought it would be a good idea to go back to his Latin roots. And this collaboration, because Billy is from Panama and the group is from Havana, they call their album De Cuba y de Panama. So what you heard there was this collection of sweet, authentic musicianship, and you could tell that everybody was enjoying themselves. Billy is spending a lot of time in Poland and Denmark and Germany these days. I think there may be a reason for that. I think he just likes to be in that world as opposed to being in the overstimulated world, shall we say, of the States. Band leader, composer, pioneering spirit, one of the best drummers that ever was, ever will be, Billy Cobham. We heard Brian Simpson from the brand new Just What You Need CD. Brian, our recent guest. And by the way, can I just say this? I'll say it anyway. I'm not asking permission because that's the beauty of this show. I don't have to do that. I'm really glad that I didn't have to fake anything when Brian was here. We were supposed to get the rundown of who was going to be at the Rehoboth Beach Jazz Festival. Maybe not at the time that Brian was doing the interview, but when he performed that Saturday afterwards in Rehoboth, well, they didn't have the lineup ready. So I'm thinking, ooh, they didn't have the lineup ready. It was going to be good. The lineup was going to be good. Let me just say this. Not to make any enemies. I'm just going to call it the way it is. I expressed this frustration earlier to my son. When I saw the lineup of who's going to be in Rehoboth this October, first of all, I didn't see any mention of George Duke and Al Jarreau. Now, George has a notation that he's going to be in Lewis, Delaware, around mid-October. I'm assuming it was for the festival. I didn't see any caliber of talent like George and Al. What I saw was, there's no other way to put it, almost every single act on the bill for this period of time is so smooth. It's just smooth jazz, period. Period. I felt like I was slipping when I was reading the names. First of all, it's the same old names that you see all the time. Every single one of them play at almost every single, for lack of a better word, contemporary jazz festival. It was just really disappointing. So I had to write to George to say, please, give me a reason to go to Rehoboth, otherwise I'm staying home. So I'll let you know. I'm glad I got that out of the way. Brian Simpson and Dave Koss right there. BrianSimpsonMusic.com has where he's going to be. There are a lot of places where our Brian is going to be, including the Soiled Dove in Denver on the 18th. He is going to be at a place, this just tickles me, this is a new club in Nashville. It's called Jazz and Jokes. A jazz and comedy club. I wish they would name it something else. But anyway, Brian's going to be there, and Dave Koz is going to be at the Cap Jazz Fest coming up, as aforementioned, in the early part of June. So there. I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying what I said, but I don't care. Jonathan Kreisberg, we heard, from New York to Miami. This young man is so wonderful on that guitar. At an early age, he was written up by Downbeat and Guitar Magazine in his teens. Got a scholarship, and he has toured with and played with some remarkable people. In turn, he has become remarkable himself. He was able to take that Baden-Powell and Vinicius Moraes song, Canto de Asaña, and make it his own. That particular song, by the way, in essence, has a somewhat spiritual connotation. It is like a sort of emotional elixir, like witchcraft for casting a spell, romantically or sexually, basically. I'll just stop right there. Jonathan was wonderful as a guest, again, in the New York area for the next few weeks, doing his thing with Dr. Lonnie Smith, who he tours with frequently, and then doing a tour across the water. Yay! Let's do another birthday, shall we? Let us please do that. One of the female pioneers, and we love to just wax poetic about those, no longer with us, as is the case for pioneers. Maxine Sullivan was born in 1911, May the 13th, same birthday as Stevie Wonder yesterday. And she was a formidable singer, one of the most popular in the 1930s. And she was brought to our attention anew, in case you were paying attention to last year's soundtrack for Red Tails. Beautiful work that Terrence Blanchard did in putting music together for that film. And one of the tracks he made sure was in the soundtrack was this one from Maxine Sullivan and her orchestra called Blue Skies on Hybrid Jazz.
Blue skies smiling at me, nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song, nothing but blue birds from now on. Never saw the sun shining so bright, never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by, when you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone, nothing but blue skies from now on. Thank you. saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my heart they fly. Bluebirds, all of them gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on.
Jazz. Something from A Time for Love by Jeffrey Osborne. Of course you know that, right? Oh, my goodness. It's just pure bliss. And I know Matt's in the chat room, and I know that he picked up the CD when he heard Jeffrey with us a couple of months ago. And, boy, wasn't that a good time. It really was. And I didn't know how much I would love this CD because initially, when you think of even a beloved performer like Jeffrey Osborne is, when you think about the fact that he's going to do a bunch of songs that were recorded with absolute perfection, authenticity, one-of-a-kind bliss by other people, you think, oh, why is he doing doing that at all. Not a good idea. But honestly, this man has so much love in his heart for the songs and really wanted to showcase the fact that his roots are jazz, that he just gave them new life. This one, you know, Charlie Chaplin wrote the song Smile, right? He did. And when you think about that little character that Charlie Chaplin had back in the day, you've seen some footage of those reels. It you get mixed emotions because this is the kind of song that clearly says to you, smile through your tears because life is not great all the time. So there's just such conviction in Jeffrey's interpretation of that, and you just have to know who's playing with him. Of course, you do know that George Duke produced the album. He's on Fender Rhodes piano, and actually George is doing the harmonica solo too. He's a trip. Christian McBride doing the upright bass. J.R., Little John's doing drums. Paul Jackson Jr. on acoustic guitar. Lenny Castro on percussion. Just really cool with that little bossa nova beat. Wonderful. Jeffrey Osborne is going to be in a lot of different places, most notably at the Playboy Jazz Festival. If you're in the L.A. area and you can get to see that lineup of talent, including our little Grace Kelly, you really do need to go. That's going to be splendid. First year is George Lopez as host, replacing Bill Cosby, who I hope volunteered that position voluntarily as opposed to being forced out. I hope so, because he just became synonymous with that festival year after year. Jeffrey, I just remembered today that he had talked with great relish about being on this Soul Train cruise again that's coming up in the next several months. Oh, he had such a good time earlier in the year doing that cruise. Again, the fly on the wall. Wouldn't you love to be with all these legends congregating together, talking about the old days? Woo! We heard Gary Bartz. It's so funny that we're playing all this music by people who have been on the show, but that's just the state of the situation. Gary Bartz on sax, Soulmate. Love that song from the Red and Orange Poems. One of those albums that people who love jazz talk about with great fondness back in 1995, just poured his heart out into this project. And Gary is a different breed of cat. For him to pour his heart out, that's a big deal. Great people on here. Eddie Henderson, John Clark, Mulgrew Miller on piano, Dave Holland, Greg Bandy, and Gary, at the age of 72, has such a roster of an itinerary, I can't believe it. He's going to be doing a Miles Davis tribute show in Chicago in the next couple of days. He's got gigs lined up with McCoy Tyner. He is in fantastic shape. In case you are a Facebook friend and have seen him, he's pretty much a vegetarian, and he keeps himself lean and mean. He's looking pretty sexy, I gotta say. Gary, if you hear me, sorry. Sorry to embarrass you, but that is the case. He's looking really good. So, Gary Bartz right there, Soulmate. Of course I would love that song. Maxine Sullivan, oh, my God, Pennsylvania born. Her birthday was yesterday. Maxine's most well known for doing a swing version of a Scottish folk song back in the day called Loch Lomond. She was active for, more than half a century, just being the amazing vocalist that she was. She was inducted into the Big Band Hall of Fame in the 90s, and she was the precursor to other wonderful female artists who came after her. And Ella and Billie Holiday and Sarah Vaughan all had something to say about Maxine Sullivan, because there weren't a lot like her at the time that she was doing her thing with such respect, even nomination for a Tony Award in her time. Beautiful life, and I'm so glad that Terrence Blanchard saw fit to make sure that she was recognized in that beautiful Red Tails soundtrack from last year. Terrence Blanchard has his fingers in so many pies. God, what a creative individual he is. That's another air show entirely. Woo! Let's do this, shall we? Focus on some more females, because I didn't get to play this track by Carla Bley. It was her birthday. She is still with us on May the 11th. She turned 77. Carla was one of those California gals. When she popped out of her circumstances, came from California to New York to be a cigarette girl at Birdland, she was one of the most awesome-looking creatures you would have ever laid your eyes on. Oh, my God, this shock of wild hair, legs from here to Nebraska. She was this free spirit, formidable in the pioneering of free jazz, a band leader, a composer of renown, married Paul Bley, who persuaded her to keep on keeping on with her piano and her compositions. There's so much to say about Carla Bley, and here she is with her long-time partner, Steve Swallow, on bass. This is from Go Together, back in the 90s, again, just as Gary Bartz was. And this is a song called Fleur Carnivore on Hybrid Jazz. Boy, if it would just be so nice to get her on the show just to pick her brain. There's so much to pick. Brilliant. Carla Bley on piano. from Carla to Keiko on Hybrid Jazz.
then and gather round me, children, children of a mother whose life lifted up love. Listen and gather round me, children, children of a mother whose life lifted up peace. A mother who's taught all of her children to love and be loved by each other. Holding your sister's hand as she walks across life and look out for each other. Carry your brother's load. Of a mother whose life lifted of hope, a mother who taught all of her children to love and be loved by each other. Hold your baby sister's hand as she walks across life and look out for each other. Carry your brother's load. Of a mother whose life lifted up love. Listen, gather around me, children, children of a mother whose life lifted up hope. A mother who taught all of her children to love and be loved by each other. me.
Mother's Day is never over until you hear the last song for us. How do you like that? Gregory Porter from Be Good and Mother's Song. Oh, my God, Gregory Porter. We're just talking in the chat room. Beej and Griselda and I, Matt, is with us. Yolanda Bell is with us today. Guests that have come and gone. Very cool. Thank you, by the way, for the close to 600 listeners. It probably has surpassed that by now. That listened to the Potomac Jazz and Seafood Festival when Kim Cullens and Greg Adams were with us the other day. Holy smoke. I'm not sure what happened there, but that's pretty doggone cool. I digress. GregoryPorter.com has information about where he will be. Let me just say this. He has more dates that he's going to do than anybody that I have played on this show. Sincerely, he's booked until 2014. I don't know what to say about Gregory Porter because his work is so stunning. His voice is so unique. Beej, you're right. He's got that distinctive voice like Randy Crawford. You know immediately who you're hearing when you hear Gregory Porter. He is a different kind of cat entirely. He wears that cap. There's a special hat that he wears. It's a winter hat. He wears that even in spring and summer. I don't know where that came from, but he's very unique in that it was just mom and he when he was growing up, and he became so enamored. I've told the story, but it just rivets me every time. He loved Nat King Cole. And one day his mom said to him, you know what, you sound like Nat King Cole. And he took that to mean that Nat King Cole was his daddy. So he thought Nat King Cole was his father for a while until he recognized that that was not the case. But he, if you have seen some videos, some of them will just take you out. There is a particular kind of presence that he has, and one of those kinds of vibes that he can convey so well is on the video that I just saw pretty recently, title track of the album, Be Good. This is just so weird, in case you didn't hear me say this when I played Gregory a few months ago. T's dad works at the American Visionary Museum. And some months ago, he had said to me, look, he said everything happened so fast today. He said, and I was working around the museum, but there was a video shoot at the museum today. And he said, I got to meet in passing the coolest guy, the most mellow guy. Big guy. And he was the star of the video. He said, I'm trying to think of his name. And I'm racking my brain because I didn't know. It was Gregory Porter. If you see the video to Be Good, that was filmed at AVAM, or the American Visionary Museum, where T's dad works. Just a beautiful place. And then they also did some filming at the train station close by, Pennsylvania Station. Just beautiful shots, and he just is able to convey so much with his face. He's precious as can be, and he's going to be at the Playboy Jazz Festival, too. He's also going to be at Cap Jazz. He's making the rounds, man. Woo! GregoryPorter.com for more information about him. We also heard from Keiko Matsui. Keiko is one of the saving graces at Rehoboth Beach Jazz this year. She's going to be there. That would be worth a ticket to go. Just heard from George Duke. He apparently has got a date with Al Jarreau right around that time. So I'm curious because I don't see him in the lineup when you go to RehobothBeachJazz.com. But anyway, Keiko did a song called Bohemian Concerto from the Road, .. If you look up the word bohemian, it means socially unconventional. So for all of us who fit that description, that song was for us. Keiko's got a full itinerary as well. One of the interesting places she's going to be soon is at the Japanese American Cultural and Community Center in the Los Angeles area, JACCC. It's a place called Aratani, and she will be there on the 25th with Jeff Kashua. That will be some kind of show. Keiko Matsui and Carla Bley, just to give you an idea for those folks who this particular factor too would resonate with, Carla got together with not only jazz folks, men, back in the day, won a Guggenheim Fellowship in 72, many respected male jazz musicians have recorded her work, including her ex-husband Paul Bley, was able to formulate, along with her professional and personal partner, Michael Mantler, back in a time when this was not done, the Jazz Composers Guild. Very heady stuff for everybody concerned. And they devised not only one, but two jazz labels. She got together with Nick Mason from Pink Floyd for his solo project in 1981. Essentially, when you hear that project, it's basically Carla Bley's work. Pianist, composer, band leader, absolute pioneer in so many ways. And it was her birthday the other day, and I would be remiss if I didn't call attention to that. Carla, wherever you are, God bless you, and we love you. What a wild story that lady has. Mercy, it's good. Listen, it's been a blast today. It really has. I'm going to close up just a couple of seconds shy of when I normally would. On Thursday, we have a young man that you need to know about. Josh Quassman. Very different. One of these creative types that just thrills my soul. Then next Tuesday, it's going to be Janice Rochelle Littlejohn and basically an all-female jazz show. Oh, yes. Kiele Minucci on the 23rd, a wonderful artist who is based in Singapore, Aaron Shenoy, Grammy nominee, and then Todd Simon to wrap up the month of May. It's been really wonderful for all this music. Thank you so much to everybody who plugged in today. Anybody who's going to plug in the archives, I appreciate you so much. Carl Stanley, love you. Thank you so much. Beej, Matt, Yolanda, Griselda, our guests, thank you again for your unbelievable support. We'll see you on Thursday. Take care from Hybrid Jazz.